Revolution. In this, we don't force everything to be an object. You just tried a bunch of functions. Higher order is preferred. That way you can combine your code in richer ways. Because the lack of state will always be ensured.
Simple but refined guarantees and lower your mind. Minimal and synthesis will clever you a
free.
One, two, three, four!
Okay, so there's a guitar solo and so forth. You can watch that. You'll probably put it in your playlist on your iPod now. But some of the messages there about simple and refined and guaranteed to blow your mind apply to Haskell as well. Okay, so I'll start now. Glad that you found the lecture theater today. It's a bit confusing that it's not actually in David Hume Tower, despite being the David Hume Tower lecture theaters. Right, let me get to the slide. So last lecture, I went a bit slower than I'd intended. So I'll try to whiz through a couple of things before get to the actual content. Okay, so before that, let me just make a couple of announcements. So first of all, it seems that the lab, for those who went to the lab yesterday, the lab handouts that were available, there was a mistake with the photocopying, okay? So you only got half of the pages, right? So here are lab handouts for everybody who wants one to collect after the lecture, okay? And for those who haven't been to the lab already, there's this doodle poll where you can sign up. And I noticed that today, Tuesday, there are still 10 places. Tomorrow it's full, etc. Thursday there's plenty of places. Friday there's plenty of places. And if you don't manage to sign up, just come along anyway. There's more than 45 seats there. Just don't want to have crowds. Okay. So lab exercises for those who were there yesterday. Was it okay or horrific or what?
Easy.
Excellent. Anybody with a different opinion? Yeah? Okay, right, chess part hard. Yeah, I sort of expected that at least towards the end it would be more challenging, okay? But at least I hope, if you got to the chess part, then you got through the first three bits anyway, so that's good. Okay, lab handouts here. Somebody left some keys at the lecture yesterday. If those are yours, they're kind of like suitcase keys, I think. Come and pick them up afterwards. And then finally, Chris Banks. Are you here, Chris? Chris is not here. Okay, I wanted to introduce Chris, who is the TA for this course, but he doesn't appear to be here unless he's hiding. Okay, never mind. You'll meet him in due course. Okay, So I'm going to just finish motivating why you want to learn Haskell, okay? And I'm going to be very quick on this, but there's a bunch of things that you can look up yourself if you require motivation. So I'm going to refer to some web pages that you can go look at, for example. Okay, so I already was talking about how Haskell is a functional language is in general a very high level. You do things at a high level, you think at a high level, you operate on data structures, whoosh in one go rather than a little bit at a time. Okay. Wait a minute. How did I get there? That's the wrong place. Let me go back to where I think I should be here. Right, that's where I was. I don't know why that didn't work. Okay, I was talking about how language shapes the way you think, and that's the same with programming languages. If you have a language which allows you to express things at a high level, then you'll think at a high level. That is Chris, okay? Chris Banks, PhD student. He is here to help you learn about functional programming. And he's the one who's responsible for the tutorial exercises, okay? And other things. For example, the blog, course blog.
Okay, so Haskell, I'll be rather quick. Haskell is a functional programming language. Obviously, it was actually designed in Glasgow mainly, so there's the list of people who were mainly responsible. The bottom three of those were all at Glasgow at the time. Okay, it's used all over the world. It's one of the main functional programming languages. It's not the only one. There's another main one, which is called ML, and that happened to have been designed here in Edinburgh at about the same time. And I was involved with that myself. So there's several of these things. They're used all over the world for different things. And one of the things they're used for, apart from education, is actually in industry to do things. And I'll come to that in a second. Okay. I said here, look at these web pages. I'm just going to tell you what they are rather than go and look at them. Or maybe I'll look at the first one. So ICFP is the International Conference on Functional Programming. It's a big conference. It happens every year. It was in Copenhagen this year. And I'll just show you the web page. This is one thing I want to show you on there. OK, there's the web page. It had lots of sponsors, and these are companies that some of these you will have heard of, like Microsoft Research. Standard Chartered is a bank. Facebook you might have heard of. Citrix is a big networking company. Credit Suisse is a bank. Google you might have heard of, etc., right? So these are companies. Twitter you might have heard of. These are all companies that do functional programming or use functional programming in their business, okay? And to be at the top of this list, you have to pay $10,000 to have your logo up here. So, there's quite a list here, and this is actually twice as long as the list last year. So, in a way, the industrial use of functional programming is exploding exponentially. I think the list last year was twice as long as the list before that. Okay, so. This is not just a thing that you learn at university and then forget about. It's actually being used out there. Microsoft. So if you go to Jane Street Capital, this is a firm that does trading on Wall Street, and they use Haskell in their trading algorithms, automatic trading algorithms that respond to market conditions and buy and sell shares and make tons of money for them. Okay, and they use Haskell. And if you go to that, actually they use. OCaml, which is a variant of ML, but similar to Haskell. Okay, if you go there, you'll see their explanation of why this is their competitive advantage over all the other firms doing the same thing. And Microsoft has last year, I think, or maybe the year before, come out with a product called F#, which is a functional programming language. And this is a case study which tells how it improves programmer efficiency by 50%. At some bank to have used this language rather than C++, I think it was. Okay, you can go and look at those yourself. Okay, there's families of programming languages. Functional and object-oriented are two of these families. There's other kinds of programming languages. Okay, there's some names of languages up there in both families. You'll see that some of the names are actually in both categories, okay? So F#, for example, are in both categories. JavaScript, probably most people wouldn't regard that as a functional language, but it does have characteristics of a functional language in it. The thing that distinguishes functional languages is, as it says here, they're more powerful, more compact programs. Object-oriented languages are, at the moment, more widely used, and they have more libraries so that you can, you have lots more stuff to build upon. But object-oriented at the moment is more widely used, okay, but who knows? Functional programming is really increasing in use these days. And part of the reason for that is that it's good for concurrent programming. Now, concurrent programming, this has to do with programming for computers that have multiple processors on them. And you probably, if you have a laptop, you probably have a dual core or a quad core processor in it. Okay, that means it has two or four processors. Okay, and in fact, if it has hyper-threading, then it has two times that number of simultaneous things happening inside it. Okay, and it used to be that computers got twice as fast every 18 months. That's called Moore's Law. And that stopped a couple of years ago, partly because increasing speed means increasing energy use, which means increasing amounts of heat that has to be dissipated. And at a certain point, things start to melt because you can't, you know, you can't cool them fast enough. And there's other reasons too, okay, to do with just the fact that the features were getting so small, that the kind of atomic level problems. Okay, so what's happening now is that chip manufacturers, in order to get things to go faster, they can't get the actual clocks to go faster, the chips to run faster, they put more processors on a chip. And that's why you hear about dual core, quad core. It will soon be 16 core, 32 core, etc. Okay, and the problem is these things are really hard to program. Okay, and I'm not going to go into a long spiel about that, but functional languages is one of the possible solutions to that. Okay, it's not something we're going to cover in this course, but it's one of the reasons why people are really increasingly beginning to use these things in practice. And for example, Google. Okay, Google MapReduce. Okay, this is one of the secrets behind Google search being fast. What they're doing when you type in a query is they're distributing your query to a whole pile of machines in their data, in their, you know, kind of data warehouse or wherever it is. So and it's this thing called MapReduce, which is which comes from functional programming. You'll learn about map and reduce in a later lecture. Okay. So it's you'll see, okay? But this is one of the uses in the real world. Ericsson, the phone switches are really complicated pieces of equipment. And Ericsson, some years ago, maybe 20 years ago now, they had a project to build the next phone switch. Okay, Ericsson, big Swedish telecoms company. Their project to build the next big phone switch failed. They were doing it in C++, and it just collapsed under its own weight. It was going to be, you know, have loads of features, and they just couldn't do it. And so in desperation, they turned to what at that time was a brand new functional language called Erlang that was produced by a small group inside Ericsson. And that saved the project. It was tremendously successful. That phone switch has what's called nine nines of reliability. Nine nines means it's 99.99999, et cetera, percent up, okay? High reliability, and that's based, that comes from a certain, well, use of functional programming to make sure that things are correct and easy to maintain, and also there's concurrency and duplication. Okay, I'll just mention Twitter is based on Scala, which is another functional programming language, etc. Okay, as I said, I'm just breezing through this bit. Okay, and functional programming is really hot right now. Okay, so even people who don't use functional programming, if you're using another language, you will be seeing features from functional programming increasingly appearing in those other languages. And here is a list of things. So these are all ideas which started off in functional programming and then migrated to so-called mainstream languages. Okay, so I'll just pick out a couple of these things. Garbage collection has to do with using memory that isn't, reusing memory that isn't being used anymore. That was actually something that came originally in Lisp. Many years ago. Higher order functions, we'll see later in the course. Generics, this is about parameterized types like arrays of strings, arrays of integers, and so forth. So the idea that you have kind of families of types, these came from functional languages. They're now in, Java, for example. Okay, list comprehensions, we'll see these next week. They're making their way into lots of languages. And then finally, C++. Type classes is something from functional languages, actually from Haskell, which it says there that it's in C++. It's actually not in C++. When C++ did the last standard, which was 2011, It was in the draft standard, and then they took it out because it was too advanced. So they decided to have it in the next standard. So maybe in 2016, C++ will finally have this idea in it. And so C++ programmers will be just as happy as functional language programmers, at least with respect to that little bit of the language. OK, right, that was pretty fast. OK, you can go back and look at that stuff later if you want. The idea is to give you motivation. And I think I skipped something. Yeah, I skipped something. This is partly in order to show you that there's lots of jobs and things in this area. Okay, but more important is maybe the way that it affects your thinking, which is what I started off with. Okay, so you can compare writing programs with writing. Stories, okay, writing prose, and then the language that you write in affects the quality of what you write. So if you write in functional programming in Haskell, you can think of yourself as writing poetry. It's beautiful. It's elegant. It's it packs a lot of stuff into a very small amount of space. So think of yourself as aspiring poets, and I'm supposed to teach you here how to write really good poetry. Okay, so that's what I wanted to have finished last lecture. So at this point, any questions? Okay, I know I've been speaking a little bit faster. Okay, please remember, ask questions if you have any. Okay. By the way, are you going to do your tutorial exercise next week before the tutorial? Yeah? Yes, everybody? Good. I want to hear a big yes. Okay, and has anybody already started on it? No. Okay, is anybody started? You've started? That's surprising because it hasn't been issued yet. So I was, trick question. Maybe you were wanting to ask something else. It hasn't been issued yet. It should be there at the end of the week. Okay. So it won't surprise you that functions are an important concept in functional programming. Okay, so let's talk about functions. Okay, I'm not sure if the terminology function is familiar to it. You might be calling it something else. Okay, but you've all seen what I'm talking about here. Okay, and there's a number of different ways of thinking about functions. Okay, a function is, one way is it's a recipe for generating an output from an input. Okay, so if we're talking about the function that squares a number, okay, you can say that in order to get the output, you multiply the input by itself. So that's a function as a recipe. Okay, you can also think of it as a set of input-output pairs like that list up there, okay? So 1, 1, so that means 1 is mapped to the result 1, 2 is mapped to the result 4, 3 is mapped to the result 9, and so forth, okay? Functions in maths are sometimes written down that way, okay? So it's like writing out the function, all of the possible results for all the possible inputs. In fact, the square function probably would have one for zero as well, but I've just left that off the list. Okay. In maths, as you learned in school, you will have certainly been seeing things like these last two things. Okay. So there's an equation up there, f of x equals x squared. This is actually more commonly written in maths with parentheses like this. Okay, same thing in Haskell. This is applying a function to something. We do that so much in Haskell that we actually don't write the parentheses down quite often to just save typing. Okay, so this is saying that the function f is defined as the function which, for any input x, produces the result x squared. Okay? And you can draw a picture like this. This picture looks like it's not quite right if it's the square function, but it has the right sort of shape. The axes are maybe not quite the same here. Okay, this is a parabola, which is what you get from you know, you'd often write that. So y-axis is the vertical one. You'd write that y equals x squared. Okay, is these familiar to you, these sorts of things? I hope so. Okay, y being, you know, you call it y because it's the, you know, the y-axis, but we're talking about a function which takes a value x and produces a value y here, okay? And we're calling, you know, this is sort of the same. This is saying we're going to call that function f, okay? Okay, that's what a function is. Okay, we sometimes call this the parameter or the argument. Okay, and this is the result. So that's functions. Okay, you're going to be seeing lots of functions. Not everything is a function in Haskell. There's also data that functions operate on. Okay, so here are some kinds of data that are built into Haskell. That is to say, the top four are built in, and the fifth one is something that is in a library that's also built in a way. Okay, so we've got, you know, numerical data. Okay, types of data in Haskell always the names of these are always they always have a capital letter at the beginning. Okay, so integer. You know, there are some examples of integers. This is not very exciting. You know, you've got so-called floats, which is stands for floating point numbers, which is a piece of computer jargon. It means that that the number of digits after or before the decimal point is not fixed. Okay, so it means you can represent in a piece of computer memory. You can just as well represent 3.14 as you can represent 3.14 times 10 to the minus 62 or something like that, okay? So it's, you know, so scientific notation, but of course that's an example of that. Okay, there's actually more kinds of numerical data, and you can see some details of that in the book, but I don't think we're going to actually be using anything in this course beyond integers. Okay, but there's, you know, double precision floating point numbers and so forth as well. Okay, there is textual data. Characters, which are written like that, that's the letter H, and strings of characters. Okay, so the character H is written, that H is written with single quotes around it. Okay, notice that that's different from strings, which are written with double quotes around it. Okay, so single quotes on my keyboard are sort of on the right-hand side near the return key, and double quotes are shift 2 on my keyboard, okay? There's another kind of quote you're going to see in Haskell as well. Come to that later, okay? And just as an example of another kind of data that you can operate on, there's pictures, okay? So these kinds of pictures appear in the lab exercise. Okay, so that's a kind of data. I mean, it's internally represented as, I don't know, a JPEG file or something like that. You can display it in a browser. And you can operate on those too. Okay, so that's kinds of data. There's other kinds of data as well. There are operations that you can do on this data, like you can add numbers together, you can display pictures and so forth, okay? So now, the interesting thing, of course, is not just to have a function, but to do something with it, and you can operate on data. So here's an example of a function. This is a function from the lab exercise, and This function is called, the function is called invert. Okay, and it takes a picture and it produces a picture. And that's the way that we write that in Haskell. Okay, invert is the name of the function. Double colon saying that I'm about to write the type of the function. That's called the type, the thing on the right-hand side. And it says it takes a picture as input and it gives a picture as output. Okay, and we write what I just said by putting an arrow between the input type and the output type. Okay, you got that? Okay, so any function, first of all, anything in Haskell has a type. Okay, possibly more than one type, in fact. And if it's a function, it'll have an arrow in the type. Okay, that arrow is a sort of a dash with a greater than sign after it, okay? Don't look for the arrow on your keyboard because there isn't one, or at least there isn't on mine. Well, actually there is, but it's for moving back and forth. It doesn't produce anything in your files. Okay, and night, so night has a night is a picture. It's sort of that picture, that black night. Actually it isn't, okay, because these slides were produced with an old version of these pictures. So it's a different night looking picture, okay, but it's a picture. Okay? And the type of night is shown there as well. Okay? So night, double colon, picture. Okay? Everything has a type. Now, the fact that the input type of invert is the same as the type of night means you can apply invert to night. Okay? You can take that function and you can use it for that value and produce the result. Okay, you with me so far? Okay, yeah.
So are you calling a function when you're calling night, or are you calling the field?
Yeah, invert is the function. Night is a piece of data,
so
right? That's right. Yeah. Night is not a function. Night is a picture. Sorry?
Is the word picture a function?
No, the word picture is a type. Okay, there's a distinction between values and types in Haskell. As in almost all programming languages. Okay, so there's the data, the values, these are the things that you can store in data structures and things, operate with, and then there's the types which say what kind of value that is, okay? So the things on the right, and they're always going to be written using capital letters, are the types, and they classify the values, which are the things to the left of those double colons, okay? Important that you understand that. Okay, everything has a type, and one of the things that makes Haskell sort of productive when you're programming is that the types are used to find mistakes in your programs. Okay, so as I said, you can apply invert to picture to night because invert takes a picture and produces a picture, and night is a picture, so it's a legitimate thing to try out. Let me actually go into the Haskell system. Now, I'm using a Windows laptop. I have already installed Haskell. It looks like that, the particular one that I'm using here. Okay. So let me just load what I need to do these examples. I'm going to be using the chess part of the thing that's in the lab exercise. Okay, so I've loaded what I need. This is just to give me the chess pieces and functions like invert. Okay, so I can type invert applied to night. Okay, and remember I said that in Haskell, you know, you'd more normally in mathematics be writing function application with parentheses, like that. In Haskell, it's optional. Okay, parentheses are used for grouping, and there's no need to group night because it's already one thing. Okay, so you can type it or not. Okay, so if I type that, okay, the first time I do it, it has to load a bunch of stuff. Okay, and it'll print some garbage here. Okay, and that's because Haskell doesn't know how to print out pictures. Okay, so as you will have seen if you've done the lab exercise already, we have you put something in your browser which will display the output of what you've done in Haskell. Let me see if I can get this on the screen at the same time as this other window so that we can see both of these at once. I'm going to have to refresh it anyway, and the refresh is actually at the top, which is a pain. I don't want that to go away. Okay, this is a little awkward. The screen's a little small, but let's see if we can do this. Okay, so what I need to do in order to get this to appear is a bit clumsy, but pay attention to the to what I'm saying and not the fact that this is clumsy. Okay, so what I'd written before was invert of night, but in order to actually see it, I have to render it. Okay, that's just an artifact of the fact that we're using pictures here rather than numbers and character strings and so forth. Okay, and in order to see that, I need to that's the wrong, go away, that's the completely wrong browser. Go away. This is the one I wanted. No, that's not it. Where is it? Oh, I made it small, that's why, okay. Here we go, okay, there's a knight, okay? In fact, the picture is, okay, picture is what it was supposed to be. I don't know if I'm going to be able to get these both on the screen at once.
You can try right with the left hand side or the right hand side of your top end.
That's true. That's an idea. I think I'm going to just do that, okay? Let's see. I might give this up and just, anyway. So you've seen that first of all, yeah, render. I didn't show you what a knight looks like. So here's what a knight looks like. I need to refresh the screen to see what the result of my last computation was. Okay, so that's what a knight looks like, and invert of a knight was the black version of that. Because invert, what it does, if you've done the lab exercise, you will have seen this. It just turns black things to white things and white things to black things. Okay, happens to be the way that function is defined in the lab exercise. Okay, so what would happen if I tried to do this? I said night is a legitimate thing to apply invert to. It's a picture, and invert takes pictures and produces pictures. What if I try to apply it to a number like 456? Okay, what'll happen? Okay, well, Haskell will complain and type out this message. Now, I don't want to go into exactly what it's saying here, but suffice it to for now, for you to know this is an error message, and it's complaining about this expression invert of 456, and it's saying something about the types don't match in its own charming way there. Okay, so anyway, so we've got functions, we can apply them to values to come out with results. Because these are pictures, I have to render them in a browser. Yeah.
Can we use like invert and then night?
Yes, of course. Yes, of course. So render of invert, what do you think it'll do? Yeah, actually it'll display a white one because the non-inverted knight is white. Okay, so there it is, okay? You may not believe that it's actually done something, but it is actually, if I did that again, let me see. If I did that again, it would turn black. Yes, see? I'm not telling any stories here. Okay, so there's other functions. Okay, these are some more that are defined in the lab exercise. Okay, for now these are built in. I'm going to be coming in a second to how you define these things yourself. Okay, so beside is a function which takes two pictures and produces a picture which you get by putting one of those pictures next to the other pictures. I guess from your way around, you take two pictures and you put this one next to that one. Okay, that's beside. Okay, flip V means flip along the vertical axis. So we take a picture and we rotate it that way. So you see it reversed. Okay, that's flip V. There's also a flip H which does that. Okay, invert you've seen, and night you've seen. And so we can do more complicated expressions like this one. Okay, I can type this in a second, but we take a night, we invert it to get the thing, the white version of it. We also flip it along a vertical axis to get the night facing the other way. Okay, this is what's happening in this expression up there. And then we put the thing at the top beside the thing at the bottom to come out with that picture. Okay? That's what's happening there in that. I can't point here, okay? But it's the expression underneath all those types. Okay? Yep.
Wait, so but right now you weren't defining anything in the thing that you did before, you didn't define anything?
I didn't define anything, no, it was built into the libraries that I loaded at the beginning.
Usually
you'd have to define things, yeah. You'd have to write these things yourself. So you get, in general, you get some sort of starting point that you can build on top of, okay? And the starting point defines some functions and things for you already. Okay? Any other questions? Yeah. You mean here?
For the type of the design?
Yeah.
First one.
The first two pictures of the input. But how can you tell them from the function in the last one?
Right, okay, that's the way you write a function with two arguments in Haskell. Is that what you're asking about? Why this has picture, arrow, picture, arrow, picture?
Does it want to see the difference between function with one argument and the input?
You don't have, well, there's a different answers to that question. So let me say that this is the way you write two argument functions in Haskell at the moment, and leave it at that. There's a more complicated answer that I don't think I should tell you right now. Okay. Sorry. You have to have, well, there's a way to get two pictures as a result. That's one part of the more complicated answer, but we haven't got to that part yet, okay? So I'll just say that's a good question. I don't think I can answer it as well as I'd like to right now because we're just starting, okay? Let me just type this in. Well, actually, let me not type it in because we're getting close to the end of the lecture, and I want to get a little bit further, okay? Because I want to at least, so trust me, if you type in that thing and you can do it yourself, you'll get that picture, okay? And what's happening is what you see in this diagram, okay? Now, of course, you can do this thing which takes a picture and makes that result out of it. You can do that with not just knights, but with anything, okay? You can do it with kings and bishops and pawns, and you can even do it with that picture there, okay? So if we want to generalize, we define a function ourselves, okay? So here's the first function that we're going to define. You're going to be defining lots of functions in this course. Here's the first one. It's taking, this is the diagram from the previous slide, and you sort of think of packaging up the thing that's happening in there in a box and giving it a name, okay? So we're going to call it double, okay? And the definition of double is shown up there, okay? So we can give double a type. Okay, now this is me declaring that the type is going to be picture, arrow, picture. And then we define double by writing an equation for it. Okay, that's all you have to do, an equation. Okay, so double P is equal to what you get by putting invert P next to VIP, flip v of p. Okay, so that expression, if you just compare that with the previous thing, that's the same expression as right there, except that that had night in it, and now we've got p, and I've defined that as a function. So the function called double takes any picture p and produces the result. If this is p, it produces result like that. Okay. Really important that that's clear. Yeah. You don't have to declare the types. It figures it out for itself most of the time. Okay. Another thing, by the way, it doesn't have to be p here. You could use x or pick or any word. Okay. Any other questions here? Yeah. Is a float value in C++? Double is not a type. It's a function. Okay, yeah.
Does it matter how many spaces you put between the function and data?
No, but you need at least one. Okay, at least one space or parentheses would be okay as well. Okay. Anybody else? Okay, I'll just try to see. Okay, so now if I apply a double to night, I just don't have time to actually do this That clock is really, oh, sorry, I was looking at the little hand and thinking it was the big hand. How stupid of me, I forgot how to tell time. Okay, I've got 10 minutes, actually. Oh, great, okay. In that case, I will actually do this, okay? So if I put the definition of double in a file and then load it, then what I would type is exactly what's up there, okay? If I do it interactively, I have to sort of warn Haskell that I'm declaring something. So I put the little word let. Okay, so let me just put double, let double of x of p equals beside, I need my glasses. Let me just so I, you don't need a space here. And you don't need a space there. You can put parentheses if you want. Okay, you can do, there's variations on this, okay? Okay, it won't say anything because I haven't actually used it, okay? The fact it doesn't say anything means that I haven't made any mistake, okay? Because if there was something wrong with the types, it would complain. Okay, it's accepted that definition, and now I can, render double of night. So I'm applying double to night and rendering the result. And let me see, where did my thing go? Here. Okay, the picture is what I said it was going to be. Okay, but not only that, of course, it would work if I did it to if I did double of double. Let me just show you what that does before I answer your question, okay? Yeah? Yeah, you don't have to write that. You can write it. Okay? It's good to write it because it announces what it is you think you're doing, okay? And Haskell will check that what you've done is consistent with that. So, you know, it's good documentation. It's helpful that you understand what it is that you're doing. You know, you're actually writing it down there. It's helpful when you try to use it that you see what the type is, okay, but it's not required. It will infer it for you automatically. Any other questions? Okay. Okay, so you see double night works. Double of anything else will work. Let me just go back a second. Okay, so obviously these The parentheses there are important, okay, because, so beside has two arguments, two values that we apply it to, okay, and the first value we apply it to is invert of p, and that's why that's in parentheses, and the second one is flip v of p. Okay, and that's in parentheses. So these are the two values, and they're in parentheses, not because parentheses are some sort of magic notation that makes it into the thing that we apply the function to. It's simply because it's for grouping, because invert p is not just one word, okay? You need to tell Haskell that invert p is the value. I mean, yeah, it's for grouping. If you didn't put them in, what it would do, it would try to apply beside to the two arguments invert and p. All right? And then it would complain because invert has the wrong type to be an argument of beside. Okay? So that's what the parentheses are. So the parentheses are important. Okay? But you can put in extra parentheses. It doesn't matter. Okay? You can put in, if you want to put in extra ones because you're not sure how many are required, I mean, I could perfectly well, I can do that if I want, no problem. It'll still work, okay? I won't show you the results the same as what it was a second ago, okay? Okay, now I can define another function. Let me call it triple. So triple is going to put something next to itself three times. Okay, so it's going to take p and put it beside itself three times. So there's two ways I can write this. Sorry, that's wrong. I'm used to different notation here. That's what I meant to write. Okay, so that's saying I put. I hope you can all read that. It's kind of small. Can you read it in the back? It says, let triple p equals beside a parenthesis beside pp, close parenthesis p. Next time I'll try to make it bigger font. Okay, I could have also written. I'm not sure what it's going to do now. It's probably going to complain it's already defined. Okay. Anyway, I think what it's complaining there is that, wrong parentheses. That's what's happened. Yeah. Let me try that again. That's what I meant. Okay. Yeah. So that would have been okay as well. Okay. And furthermore, there's another way to write this. Okay, beside is a function with two arguments. Okay, it takes two pictures and produces a picture. Any two argument function we can write in so-called infix style. In meaning like in between or something like that. The normal style is called prefix. Okay? And the way we do that is, just a second, let me do it and then explain it. We can take any function with two arguments and make it into an infix function by writing it with back quotes around it. And that's handy sometimes. That's wrong. Wait a minute. I've got too many P's. Okay? So you probably can't see that from the back, okay? This is a different kind of quote than what I used for defining characters earlier on. This is a back quote. It's in a different place in the keyboard from the normal quote. You don't use it very often in typing. On my keyboard, it's underneath the escape key and to the left of the digit 1. Okay? It's in other places on other keyboards, okay? Anyway, the function of that, the purpose of that is to make is to make it sometimes nicer to write functions with two arguments. Okay, and when I just said that there's two ways of writing that, the two ways correspond to these two definitions if I write it out in this style. Okay, I don't know, can you see that in the back? Okay, right. Now, those are equivalent. I can show you what this will produce, but what I want to say right now is talk about the fact that these are equivalent. Anybody know what it's called that these are equivalent? There's a mathematical name for that. Equivalence, yeah, but it's a property of beside. Associativity, yeah. Okay, beside is associative. Okay. So if you put P beside P and then put P next to that, it's the same as putting P next to P. Okay, if you see what I mean. So X beside Y beside Z, and now I'm being too quick. That's the same as, I should put all the little quotes in here. That's the same as X beside Y beside Z. I'm being too quick. Okay, that's called associativity. And because beside is associative, those are going to produce the same result. And in fact, you don't have to put the parentheses in at all. OK, that works too. OK, and it doesn't matter what order, what place puts them. OK, that's it for today. Question? Sorry, I can't hear. Could you come up and ask? OK, remember, lab exercises here, somebody's keys here. Okay?
You defined the triple function really right there with let, right? But you didn't define the type of the function with stroke. What does that mean?
You mean like that?
Yeah.
Yeah. You don't have to define it. It figures it out for yourself. Let me just show you. You can actually ask what the type of the function is, like that, it'll tell you. So it figures it out for itself.
I have a question. Do we have to go to the laboratory to do it? Can I Pascal on my computer?
You can do it at home, but the submit part you'll have to do either from the lab or using an SSH connection to a DICE computer.
So I have to come to the library to submit?
Not the library, to the lab.
The lab.
Yeah, to submit. Yeah, that's step three, I think.
I think I'm still not signed up for the tutorials in computation and logic. The address, I mean, I should tell you or someone else by email or something.
So the ITO.
ITO.
ITO, everything about the tutorials, the ITO. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, of course. Okay, let me take everybody who want to ask questions outside. You have a question in the meantime? Yeah. From the course webpage. Do you mean Haskell?
Yeah.
Haskell. Course webpage has a link. Has a link.
Okay, and yeah. It doesn't mind if it's for Windows or something.
There's different ones for Windows and for Mac. So anybody who wants to ask questions, let's go outside, okay?
For the block thing.
I'll come and retrieve you.
How you doing?
Hello. Oh, it's a pain, I know. He overran, didn't he?
I thought he wanted to do the same.
Yeah. Well, if we can get the others in, that's the main thing. It's just I've got a very big
cord.
No, they should not have been the lectures. I mean, the conics was supposed to be done last week, that's why the problem comes. No, typically it should be the quiz one should be exactly on the topic of the lecture. And actually it's good to do it in a